We've all seen them, the crazy homeless man ranting and raving on a street corner, the bag lady muttering to herself. We see them, but we hurry past. We see them, yet in many ways they're invisible. Photographer Michael Nye also saw them in his town of San Antonio, Texas, but instead of looking away, he looked right at them with a camera lens. But he did something else. He took a tape recorder with him and asked his subjects for their story. What resulted is a powerful mix of images and words. Anne Strangechamps sat down with Nye.
You know, these are amazing photographs, and the faces are just really unforgettable. When I saw your exhibit for the first time, the first photo I saw was of a man named Jerry. And I wonder if you could tell us about Jerry and your photo.
I met him in the morning at a homeless shelter. And the 4 days preceding that, he had been in jail, locked up and released, locked up and released for getting into fights. He has bipolar disorder. He's an alcoholic. And in fact, he died about a year and a half ago. He was in a fight downtown San Antonio and was killed. But he has a bandage over his eye. He has a big bruise. He's not wearing a shirt. He's looking directly into the camera. And his voice and his story, I think his image, are all very giving. There's nothing that he held back. It was very moving to be with Jerry and to spend 3 or 4 days with him and to learn from him.
When I became homeless, I was 16. I'm diagnosed with bipolar, mood swings, depression, turmoil, anxiety, hate, wanting to lash out, other times being euphoric, happy. My state of depression is that somebody could walk up to you and just say, hey, have a nice day, and just blow your brains out. You don't care. As long as it's fast and painless, you don't care. Sometimes getting beat down, you know, that makes you feel good because it makes you feel like I'm wanted. At least somebody took the effort to take the time to whoop me. You know, it's like, I'm serious, it sounds crazy, but it's true. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I just want to fit in. I want to be a normal person.
He talks about longing to be seen, and that's such a common thread that runs through almost all of the stories, don't you think?
I think wanting to be treated as a human being, for people to look at you, to have dignity, the quality of being valued, highly valued. I'm thinking about Jerry's story, but also Doris's story, and I'd like to read a quote from her. It's some of the same thing. She says, "The public looks at individuals with mental illness like we're not even human. When I look at people who talk like that, they use terms like lunatic. They talk about you in the third person like you're not even in the room. They think we're all dangerous. They don't want to be seen in our company. They're afraid to come near us." And I think that's a common, painful, and cruel stigma that oftentimes the public, how they treat individuals that have mental illnesses.
I think one of the most amazing things about this exhibition is how articulate these people are. And it's not just their ability to put their experience into words. It's they've achieved a really kind of rare ability to watch their own minds. When I was listening to a bunch of these stories and thinking, you know, people do Buddhist training for years to try to develop the ability to watch their own minds like this.
Depression is very hard to describe. It's not so much a thing as a lack of. It's like a dark cave, devoid of feeling, devoid of light, nothing to look forward to. It's a horrible state of non-existence. My type of mental illness now is bipolar. Part of my mental troubles had me prowling around the missions at 2 or 3 in the morning, and the little candles were flickering, and the walls, a lot of them had crumbled. I had been walking around wearing some strange garment, and get this, would you believe, crown of thorns from a mesquite tree up there, and someone reported a creature walking around, and I remember being very roughly handled and taken in a patrol car to the hospital. I was aware that it was a paddy wagon. That part of me was embarrassed, but what could I do about it? I feel like life is a great deal like fog. It's hard to be wise, you know, when you really need to. You can see a sore, a break, a cut, but you don't see mental illness. You only react to it. You see what they do, and it's bizarre and ridiculous and at times funny. I would just say, hold on. Just hold on. It'll get better.
I think everyone has a wisdom about their own experience. They know something that no one else knows. And so the stories really are about those kinds of wisdoms, what only Jerry experienced or Doris or Beth experienced about their own personal histories.
You mentioned Beth. Now, her childhood experiences left her with permanent post-traumatic stress disorder, and somehow you capture that in your photograph of her. Could you describe it?
She's in a garden. She, growing up, was one of the most talented writers in her high school, and she performed her own songs on stage. So as a child, she was beaten, sexually abused, and she's literally stayed in one chair in her kitchen for years. And in her narrative, she speaks about kindness and the concept of hush and libraries. It's very beautiful. But in the photograph, she's in a garden, and she's standing against a white wall inside corner, and she's standing on ivy. It's thick and green. And although the photograph's in black and white, and I took the picture in late afternoon, and the sun was low and the wind was blowing, and behind us was a large pecan tree, and so the shadows or the branches and leaves were constantly in motion. And for me, what was beautiful about the image was the quality of light. There's a glow, white light on white wall and white on light gray. And Beth is standing in a long dress with her right hand gently holding the side of the wall.
My favorite place to be is a place that I'm most safe. It's a corner in my kitchen, and I've got it fixed up to look like a treehouse. And on my left is a window with plants everywhere, and everything a person would want, books, music, that's in my safe place. I spend 3/4 of my waking life in that safe place. How is it possible to love someone that beats you up, that uses you, that degrades you? I don't understand why a parent would grab a child's hair and twist it around and slam that child into a wall. How a father who's going through a drought of loneliness take one of his children and strip that child of dignity and knowledge and give that child pain. Why would a parent deprive them of food, lock them in a cabinet? Why would that happen? I'd like to wrap my arms around someone, whether my age, older, younger, wrap my arms around someone that is going through this until they finally believe it's not their fault, they're a beautiful person. Kindness is more important than anything else in this world. I think that every philosopher has probably tried to tell us that. That's what it comes down to. What else are we here for but to take care of each other, to nurture the planet? What else are we here for? There's a thing when we're children we experience, it usually exists in libraries, and it's called the hush, like this magic world called hush. There's not many places now to find hush. Sometimes I really do think that if every person would experience hush, even if they almost have to force it on themselves for a while, just the bird, just the wind, nothing else, hush, there would be less violence.
Will you tell me about the photograph of Elizabeth?
I was interviewing Elizabeth about anxiety disorder and agoraphobia, about the fear that she had of leaving her home. And so she called me between interviews. She was trembling, and she said, "I just experienced a panic attack." And so through our conversation, I said, is there any way maybe this week you could come over to my studio and maybe go through that experience? And she was so giving and absolutely agreed. She said, let's try to do that. And it was downtown San Antonio on St. Mary Street. It was late in the afternoon. The photographs late in the afternoon. It was very busy, lots of traffic and cars. I had my large camera set up. It's an old lens, maybe 80 years old, and it didn't cover the negative. So the image is a circle in the rectangle, and around the circle is black. And Elizabeth is leaning up against the wall. And right as I'm taking the picture, a pedestrian turns the corner, and he's in a blur. Only his foot or maybe his one arm is in focus. And listening to Elizabeth's story about a panic attack, it's a reminder that we all have our own separate histories. What about his life? What about hers?
It was a cold morning. It was drizzling. I had an appointment to go downtown that morning. And everything was fine. Just a normal day. When I got on the bus, I went to a favorite spot by the window. The first sensation was there was too much noise, too many notes. All of a sudden, everything is flooding my mind. I don't know why I'm going anywhere. I'm not sure someone's not out to get me. I'm going insane. I feel like everyone's thinking, there's that insane person. All this stuff starts flooding my mind. It's horror. Horror. I can hear and feel my heart pounding, pounding like it's knocking on my chest wall. My hands are pretty clammy. I was scared. I was afraid they would be afraid of me. I had no control over my tears, so I got on the floor of the bus so I could hide for a while, hoping this would pass. I was crying. It's just terrifying. So humiliating. No dignity. Afraid to look into anyone's eyes. Then I got interrupted. The bus driver said I needed to get off the bus. Miss, you need to get off the bus now. You're causing a disruption. I didn't feel like I could move. I was two people. I made myself get up off the floor and slowly walked to the front of the bus and got off. When I got off the bus, there was a telephone pole, and I went over to it and held on to it until I felt stable. That's what it feels like to go through this. That's what a panic attack feels like.
This might be kind of an odd question, having heard how much pain a lot of your subjects have experienced in their lives, but if you could wipe out mental illness tomorrow, would you do so? I guess I'm wondering, is there a function for this kind of sadness, this kind of pain? Do we need these people in some way in our culture?
Well, as I've talked about earlier, the 60 people in the exhibit, I see them as teachers. You know, not as people with mental illness. They are helping us. There is a function. We can understand more about ourselves, more about humanity, the questions that Immanuel Kant asked. So we do need them for understanding, for insight, for courage. I found myself being inspired over and over. So I do think we need to listen to people that have been challenged in their lives. I remember Virginia Woolf's in her diary, she says that we need to look at the landscapes of our life and we can find that pain and sorrow reveal some truths.
Yes. Oh, yes. I listen to this song over and over and over and over again. As many times as I can. Sometimes 10, 15 hours a day. I feel stronger when I hear the music. I feel normal. Those are the feelings that I have.
Michael Nye is a photographer living in San Antonio, Texas. Anne Strainchamp spoke with him.